From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell in icy New York. If you've been reading the work of David Skoff in the New York Times, I guess that's the name of the paper, Dave?
Still called that.
You know that he tends to actually focus his point of view on people who are obsessed. It's a really interesting kind of purview that's kind of run through his work, and it definitely comes to a crest in his new book, Mad as Hell, The Making of Network and the Fateful Vision of the Angriest Man in Movies. Dave, first of all, thanks so much for doing this.
I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you.
But I want to ask you, though, because you really do kind of focus on obsession in people, and I wonder where that comes from for you.
Seems pretty obvious, I guess. I mean, I like people that are, you know, really fixated on their work, and I probably apply similar approaches in my own. I like things that I can really dig into. I'm pretty protective of the things that I do, and I'm sure I, if not consciously, subconsciously recognize that in other people. That's what I'm probably drawn to.
And in picking this movie, Network, written by Paddy Chayefsky, who also produced, he basically is kind of the center of the storm. His obsession basically drew everybody else in, didn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, that was what was so fascinating to learn in the course of just sort of unpacking this story. He was a screenwriter I knew a little bit about just because of his resume. The films that he'd won Oscars for were so different, and his career, you know, was so broad, touched so many different mediums. But it wasn't really until I was able to kind of, you know, dig into his personal papers and talk to other people and really learn that, you know, I mean, Network was a movie that really was, you know, as much as it is the work of Sidney Lumet and it is the work of the actors who participated in it and everyone else, it really is the emanations of this man and all the things that he was fixated on and paranoid about and worried about, you know, in the 1970s, some of which are things that are still worth worrying about today.
Yeah, I just find myself thinking, too, though, Network, there's almost the movie The Americanization of Emily, which he wrote and directed by Arthur Hiller, was almost kind of a dress rehearsal for this. You've got the guy who's basically anti-establishment, who's in the middle of a media storm, who is completely skeptical about this whole thing. In his way, he could be sort of Max Schumacher and Howard Beale, couldn't he?
Certainly. I mean, I think you can trace it all the way back even to, you know, the early Chayefsky teleplays and, you know, things like Marty, which, of course, you know, became the movie as well. There's always this recurring theme of characters who are kind of, you know, pent up and not really allowed to express themselves. And then once they do, when they're kind of given an opportunity to cut loose, they really just explode. And that's very much an idea in Network, of course, the idea of going to your window and opening it up and shouting out, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. I mean, that's, you know, something that Chayefsky was sort of urging people to do really, you know, throughout his career.
I'm going to ask you for the nine people who haven't seen Network to talk about what the movie's about.
Sure. So it describes the activity at a fictional fourth place television network, again, in an era when there were only three other broadcast networks. And the anchor person of their national evening news show, Howard Beale, is told that he is going to be fired and threatens on air to commit suicide in a future broadcast. And that sort of begins his mental unraveling. But while this is happening, it sets off a kind of conflict between a sort of old school news director played by William Holden, the character Max Schumacher, who wants very much for Howard to come off the air, knows that he's sort of embarrassing himself or believes that he's embarrassing himself.
And loves him.
Yes, and is a good friend of his and has a similar – they both have these sort of long histories in the news business. But then there is also a sort of new breed of programming entertainment executives represented by Faye Dunaway, who plays a really sort of opportunistic character named Diana Christensen. And she not only wants Howard Beale to stay on the air because it's going to increase ratings and be more sensational, but even as she is carrying on an affair with Max Schumacher, is always warning him, you know, I'm going to take over your news show one day. And she, of course, does get her way.
Well, what's fascinating to me also about the book, Dave, is just that the period between Marty and Network was basically, that interregnum was almost like a series of unparalleled disasters for Chayefsky.
I mean, you know, there are, you know, highlights, as you mentioned, things like the Americanization of Emily and the hospital. But, you know, I think
he failed on Broadway.
Yeah, I mean,
he even failed in network television.
Yeah, his whole it is really a wandering in the desert. That, you know, I mean, he's very frustrated and disappointed with all the stage plays that he produces. Either, you know, they didn't come out the way he wanted, his actors got more attention than he did for the writing. And Chayefsky is also not sort of quiet about – I mean, he's a bridge burner. You know, when something goes wrong, he says it and he names names. And so by the time the 1970s rolled around, then he's already – he's kind of disowned TV, he's disowned theater, disowned movies. And
because these things have all – these institutions have all disowned him.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. So he's basically burning bridges at places that have kicked him out of the buildings.
Well, I think there's still – anytime – because he's got these two Oscars to his name by this point, I think anytime he says, you know, I've got a new script or I'd like to develop a script, people are always interested in sort of hearing him out.
But you talk about in the book how he developed Network at another studio, United Artists, and it's the place where filmmakers got the most freedom of any place, and they looked at it askance.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it was something that he basically, in a way, kind of wrote on spec. I mean, knowing that at least one studio was going to be interested, and, you know, they came close to a deal at Warner Brothers, and that fell through. And then, you know, UA, which at that point, you know, I mean, they were coming up with things like, you know, Midnight Cowboy, and they had One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest sort of in the hopper at that point.
And we're just beginning to develop that the relationship with Woody Allen.
Exactly. So they were known for quality as well as things that were, you know, genuinely lucrative and seemed like an ideal place. And, you know, literally Chayefsky has, you know, one conversation there with a guy, a high-ranking executive in their business affairs department, who says, you know, I've got some concerns about this Howard Beale character. And Chayefsky just storms out of the meeting, and it really – it could have sunk the whole picture right there if MGM hadn't kind of stepped in and shared the project with UA. But that's the level of control that Chayefsky expected, and sort of the level of – the degree to which he expected anyone else to be hands-off, that he just – he knew what he wanted his movies to be, and, you know, he would fight you tooth and nail to make sure that he got them that way.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to Dave Iskoff of the New York Times. His new book is Mad as Hell, which is a terrific book on the making of Network and the sort of black hole of ambition and melancholy that is Paddy Chayefsky. I wanted to ask you, because one of the things I didn't really know about, I heard some rumblings about over the years, was this script that he wrote for CBS, The Imposters, which a lot of the groundwork for Network was laid in that pilot script, including naming the network UBS.
Yeah, I mean, you can really look at that as a kind of dry run for Network also. And literally one of the two principal characters in the series had it, you know, gone, was going to be a disillusioned television executive, one that he based not too secretly on a real CBS executive of the day named Mike Dann, who was one of their vice presidents. There was a long three-part profile of him that ran in TV Guide at the time that presented him as, like, you know, very principled.
And literate.
Yes, but also sort of overqualified, that, you know, this is an era of, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies, and does CBS really need a guy who's into, you know, live broadcasts of, you know, Death of a Salesman, or even, you know, even a guy who sort of championed the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour? Like, where does a guy like that fit into a network like CBS? But that was a guy that excited Chayefsky, and he wrote a pilot story about a guy who sort of comes to the same realization, and that the phrase that he would later associate with Howard Beale, we're in the boredom killing business, that's a line that he writes for The Imposters, that this character says, it sort of makes this realization himself, that that's all his job entails, is killing the boredom of his viewers.
I was wondering, though, because in your writing about The Imposters, it sounds kind of cheeky and kind of a lighter tone than I would generally associate with him. Was that what the script read like?
It seemed pretty far out to me, that, you know, one of the subplots has to do with, you know, he is trying to develop a television series for Harry Belafonte that's going to be a kind of modern day version of the Three Penny Opera, and Belafonte's character
is a junkie.
Yeah, sort of junkie version of Mac the Knife. Like, that's pretty wild, especially for 1969. I think you have to be, and to think to yourself that this is going to get on the air on CBS in 1969. I mean, you got to be pretty optimistic, to say the least.
And that was also a crazy period, because, as you said, where CBS was famous as being the rural network. All the shows that were their big hits, which they eventually all canceled, even though they were at the top of the ratings, were all these shows about hayseeds.
Yeah, the cornpone comedies, as they are called. But, you know, there was, you know, every once in a while, the networks would sort of make these deferences to, you know, more, not necessarily higher culture, but just, you know, things that were a little bit more.
But it wouldn't be tough to be higher than the Beverly Beverly Hillbillies. Right.
Or just things that were meant to be a little more, you know, literate or all-encompassing or bring in a slightly higher-brow viewer. And you know, in fact, that's part of the reason that Chayefsky eventually gets to the hospital is that he originally tried to develop it as a TV series. And you know, and, I mean, he was way, way ahead of his time in that sense about, you know, what he wanted to write was a TV series about really more, he was more interested in the institution than individual characters, and that the institution itself would come to be this kind of microcosm of America. And that's what the film The Hospital became, and Network itself really was sort of the same idea. But you know, these things were pretty ahead of their time for, you know, 60s and 70s era television.
Well, I thought it was fascinating too, and you even say it towards the last third of the book, is that he got guarantees in his contracts that said lines couldn't be changed, that you had to really stick to the text of the script. And he even talks about during the experience of making Altered States, which eventually broke his heart and killed him, he talks about that, how he had these guarantees and it still doesn't make any difference half the time.
Yeah. I mean, that's it's remarkable that, you know, certainly by the time of Network, he has, you know, a system in place where he is on set every single day. I mean, basically right there with Sidney Lumet. And they even create a kind of system, a separate key light for him to stand underneath so that he can really see things up close but not, you know, stumble into the shot. And they put a little sign on it. They call it the Paddy light, so that if anybody on set is looking for him, oh, they just know he's standing underneath the Paddy light. But you're also right that that – you know, it's really his undoing. And when you do get to a project like Altered States, that, you know, that level of control is so crucial to him that he just, you know, he can't countenance, you know, certainly a director like Ken Russell was probably like the worst possible combination of, you know, ego and personality for him. And, you know, he's kicked off the set pretty much on day one. And, you know, that leads to him pretty much disowning the movie at the end.
I guess I find it fascinating too, just that, again, that sort of period of wandering in the desert, as you put it. I mean, there's such a – and I think this book is compared to your others, is really so much about loneliness, that kind of loneliness that sort of pervades everything that he's done, that he had done as a writer, really seeped into your take on this.
Well, he certainly drew a boundary between his public life and his home life, and the home life was very volatile. I mean, certainly by the era of Network. I mean, his wife had become very reclusive. And
has sublimated her own desires to become his wife.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, of course, you know, we sort of realize it now, but, you know, I mean, that was just an era when, you know, women for the most part were not really allowed to have careers or creative pursuits. And so her whole life, you know, as much as she sort of, you know, dabbled in things, you know, her job was basically to support her husband's career and be, a kind of, you know, just persistent moral support to him. And she had her own, you know, health problems. I mean, she was somewhat agoraphobic and then also had a kind of a, you know, adult onset kind of, you know, epilepsy or, you know, things where she would just basically, you know, she would have panic attacks and seizures and just, like, really was already a person who did not want to leave the house and then just really couldn't leave the house. So that was something that Chayefsky really kind of, you know, kept secret from other people, didn't really share with other people. And also, as you say, I mean, just the relationship with his own son who was, you know, in his, you know, late teens, early 20s by the sort of Network period, who was, you know, he was going through a tremendously self-destructive phase and his father just really couldn't grasp him at all, just couldn't understand him. And I mean, these are the two people that are living closest to him, sharing a house with him, and he just doesn't understand either of them. You can understand sort of why he would just completely, you know, just take refuge in his writing.
We'll have to take a break. My guest, whose fascinating new book is Mad as Hell, it's a book on the making of Network, is Dave Itzkoff. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Take KCRW with you on one of our smartphone apps. Available for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. You can stream KCRW live, listen to podcasts, and all our news and music streams. Learn more and download at kcrw.com/apps.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. We're talking about Dave Itzkoff's great new book, Mad as Hell. It's a book on the making of Network. One of the things that I was getting back to what we were talking about near the end of the first half is there's this incredible kind of misogyny in Chayefsky. You think about the Diana Rigg character in Hospital or Emily and the Americanization of Emily or both of the women in Network. That sort of idea that women were beyond his control, the goddess even. I mean, the women slipped out of his control, and the fury that these characters reacted to because they could do everything but control these women. That obviously was something he brought to the fore based on his home life.
I think that that's possible, and I think, you know, if you look at the evolution, certainly of the Diana Christensen character in Network,
who had the homie named Louise in her
exactly, and that, I mean, that's the name that he does eventually give to Max Schumacher's wife, who's the wronged spouse. But you know, with Diana, at one point she was going to be a much more sort of, you know, run of the mill love interest who, you know, good natured, and it's her love that redeems the lost Max character, and then he completely flips it on its head, and, you know, he makes her the sort of young, up-and-coming, hotshot executive, the one with all the, you know, sinister ideas, the one who is pure ambition, the one that eventually gets tagged as television incarnate, which we know is not a compliment.
Even today.
Yeah. I mean, there's a line that really just stuck with me. It starts off in Lenachaevsky's script, and it goes I mean, all the way to even when they put out the press releases announcing that Faye Dunaway has taken the role, that Diana is described as tall, willowy, and with the best ass ever seen on a vice president of programming. And this is language that nobody even thought twice about, including in a script or in a press release at the time. That's just how women were regarded. And somehow they think they're sort of breaking a mold by casting a woman in this position of power. And I think, you know, Dunaway was sort of warned by some of her associates at the time about taking this role, that people are going to basically, you know, equate you with the character. And she knows that going in, and she's sort of happy to take on that challenge.
But as you mentioned in the book, even the reporting on her in People magazine calling her a tigress, and she rightly says that, you know, a man who is this obsessive about performance is treated as an artist, and a woman does not get that kind of a treatment at all. I mean, just that aspect of Chayefsky, just having it right there in front of me, it just, oh God, yeah, he really didn't like women or didn't understand women, and that translated into a kind of a helpless anger about them.
I think so, and I think he probably thought he was doing something progressive by creating a female character who was, you know, essentially male in all of her, you know, desires. And it was interesting to talk to somebody like Barbara Walters, who was literally kind of living through a Diana Christensen-like experience at the time that the movie's coming out. That it was just when she was hired to be a co-anchor of a national network news broadcast with, you know, Harry Reasoner.
And how much was she being paid?
Well, she got $1 million a year, but it was half of that was for her entertainment special.
As you mentioned in the book, though, that never got mentioned. It's just that $1 million a year for a woman?
Right. That's what everybody focused on. Harry Reasoner completely, you know, froze her out.
He was a co-anchor.
Exactly.
On ABC News.
Right. And that, you know, her take on it is that, you know, I mean, even a Diana Christensen-like approach was sort of implausible. You couldn't – basically, there was really no way for a woman to conduct herself in that kind of a workplace at that level at that time, that the news industry just wouldn't countenance it, no matter, you know, whether you were hard as nails or whether you were cooperative or complacent. There was just no place for women there.
See, I just wondered that too, because one of the things I find fun about the book I was saying to you is just that sense of theatrical loneliness. I mean, just basically the Patty light. I mean, basically, so reminding people he was this lone figure. And even in his exchanges, his conversations with other people, he comes across as being this object in amber. And I wonder when it occurred to you to sort of to move the focus to that, because it's a pretty fascinating take on somebody.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks. I it's something that I think was just sort of always present. You know, I mean,
Or did it come to you as you start to read more and more of the material?
Well, I mean, you find things that kind of, you know, help you fill in the gaps and that continue to sort of reinforce. You know, you draw your own sort of mental image of a person when you can only use, you know, of course, you know, Chayefsky died, you know, more than 30 years ago, so he's not available to us. You have to sort of go by, you know, what's in his writing, what other interviews that he gave. And then you're also having your impressions kind of filled in by other people who were around him. His producing partner, Howard Gottfried, is still alive, and we talked quite a bit for this. His son, Dan Chayefsky, talked to me for the book, and they each have their own takes on him. I mean, you see it in, you know, literally one of the first documents that I was introduced to were, you know, the letters of apology that he wrote to Walter Cronkite and John Chancellor right after Network came out, when the people in the news industry were some of the first people to see Network, and they were scandalized by it and horrified that Chayefsky had portrayed the business even satirically in that way. And Chayefsky is not a person who ever apologized really for anything in his life. So the fact that, you know, he did take the time to really – to say he was sorry to these men, I mean, you see – you know, I mean,
but you do mention that Walter Cronkite kind of turned on him a little
bit. Oh, sure. No. I mean, I think Chayefsky was taken aback by, you know, if Cronkite thought that he had been stabbed in the back, I mean, I think so too did Chayefsky kind of feel later, like, I thought this guy was on my side and, you know, I was clearly mistaken in that. And he's wounded. The fact that Chayefsky himself cannot realize that this movie is going to upset so many of the professionals in the industry he's making fun of. He's so hyper-attuned to this sort of larger message that he's trying to get across with the movie, these themes of alienation and corruption, that it never really occurs to him, like, hey, maybe the people in this business that I am mocking are not going to take kindly to this movie. It just doesn't – it really is just not even something that he contemplates. You know, he thought these people really were going to be in his corner, or at least see the grander purpose that he had in mind.
It's a treat when talking about Paddy Chayefsky, who was the writer and producer of Network, among other things. He's the subject – he and the movie Network are the subject of Dave Itzkoff's compelling new book, Mad as Hell, The Making of Network. I guess one of the things I thought about as I was reading the book, though, is I went and reread this collection of interviews, The Craft of the Screenwriter, in which Chayefsky recasts Marty as a comedy. He said it was supposed to be a satire. You go, what is he talking about?
I think at the end of his life there was a lot of – you know, if you want to be generous, reorientation or sort of, you know, these kind of after-the-fact justifications of things. I mean, I don't think you could read Marty then or now, and he's not making fun of that character. I mean, that is such a – I mean, he's really – if he isn't Marty himself, I mean, he is very much in the same boat as that person. The loneliness that that guy feels and you know, the lovelorn qualities. I mean, he is not mocking that figure at all. But that John Brady interview in particular, I mean, that was at the very, very tail end of Chayefsky's life.
Just before the release of Altered States.
Yeah. And I think that book even maybe was published after Chayefsky's death.
Absolutely.
You just wonder to what extent he kind of saw it coming. You know, I don't know how, you know, how much he knew about his own health at that point, and if he really senses, like, I'm giving the last interview of my life, and that, you know, I'm going to be making the final statements on all this work of mine, my own life. You know, there is a certain amount of just taking a final stock that occurs in that interview. It's very sad.
Well, the reason I was happy to reread that, because it made me think about a couple of incidents you relate in the book and Chayefsky's affinity for comedians. I mean, there's the story that Mel Brooks tells that ended up leading to the creation of The Imposters, and then also this fascinating episode with David Steinberg.
Right. Well, that he and Steinberg were in Washington for one of Steinberg's performances, and somebody in the audience yells out a Jewish slur at Steinberg, and then later on Chayefsky and Steinberg are in an elevator with a man that at least Chayefsky is pretty sure is the guy who yelled the slur at Steinberg and really got up in this guy's face, you know, a guy who Steinberg says was much bigger than Chayefsky, but it didn't impede him. You know, I mean, he does have a very strong comic side to him, and people who knew him said that, you know, for all of his other qualities, he was a very humorous and funny person. And he did very, very early on in his career. I mean, that one of the ways that he tried to break in was as a gag writer. I mean, it's conceivable that, you know, I mean, had a couple of breaks gone a different way, maybe that's, you know, more of how his career would have ended up. And there's a lot of humor in Network, a lot of lines that were meant to be funny that are still genuinely funny today.
Well, there's a lot of humor in all this stuff, too. But what I find fascinating, and you get at this, is the almost convulsive shifts in tone in his work. I mean, he really did contain multitudes in that way, didn't he?
Yeah, and I mean, certainly as he kind of, you know, gets to ascend the ladder of life a little bit, and he realizes or is, you know, attuned to all the problems of not only in his backyard, but in the country and going on in the world. I mean, he was just so sensitive to all of them. I mean, anything, you know, I mean, things in the Middle East, you know, really preyed upon his consciousness. And, you know, I mean, all the talk and Network of, you know, the Arabs taking over. And I mean, it sounds almost like a kind of like a joke now, but those were things that really worried him, that he really did fear that, like, you know, the Arabs were going to buy up everything, or that multinational conglomerates were going to take over all the networks. He was right about that.
Absolutely. He was. But that's the thing, too, that in one way or another, though, and you touch on this by talking about all the things that he wrote, his pieces are so much about a man out of time, either being a man behind his time, as Howard Beale and Max Schumacher are, or in the case of James Garner, and to some extent the William Hurt character in Altered States, men ahead of their time, but men being out of place, people being anachronistic. And that really obviously touched a nerve in you as well.
Yeah, this is like gestalt therapy. It's like,
so you got a really cheap therapist if that's the one your therapy
is like.
I should be
paying you for this hour.
It's only 28 minutes, Dave. I'm sorry. It only feels like an hour.
But you're absolutely right on, and that, you know, I mean, it does speak to a lot of aspects of Chayefsky's career that you wonder, you know, was he constantly jumping ship on projects or on one medium to the other because he knew at some point he was just fearful that somebody was going to turn on him, like let me destroy my reputation in one arena before it can turn on me and ruin me. Let me be the one to light the match as opposed to being the one that gets burnt. You know, I think that certainly recurs in his career, and just his own sense of, you know, never quite fitting in or never feeling like he was quite in the right place at the right time. And certainly even with Network, to the extent that he sees it catch on nationally and people taking the phrase, you know, I'm mad as hell, taking that to heart and still feeling like they don't get the message of the movie and that they've just reduced it to this kind of bumper sticker catchphrase, but they didn't really understand what I was saying. I think even at the end of his life, that continues to wound him.
But I just find myself fascinated, too, just knowing your stuff as I do. This subject really hooked you, and Chayefsky seemed to be this personage as a media personality, but also as a human being that really grabbed you in some fundamental way.
Well, I think if you're engaged in any kind of, you know, artistic endeavor or pursuit, you know, you've probably had, you know, similar thoughts or considerations that he had, which is, you know, how deeply am I going to invest myself in any one thing? And how much does it mean to me to get across the message of whatever it is I'm trying to communicate in this thing that I'm doing? Well, he was somebody who gave everything that he had to communicate his interests and desires. And we can also see what it cost him and how many of us would make those same sacrifices, you know, knowing what the end result is and what it really takes out of you in order to do that. I don't know how many of us could. I couldn't, and it's remarkable that there were ever people like him that did that.
No, we're out of time, Dave. Thank you so much for being here.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for the therapy.
Oh, my pleasure. My hour condensed down to 28 minutes is with Dave Itzkoff, whose terrific book is Mad as Hell. By the way, he needs to get a new therapist. Our recording engineer here at Argo Studios. What a great name for a place. It's Paul Ruiz. The show is mixed by Melissa Morton. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm Mad as Hell. You know how this goes. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.